Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to NITP's For Your Benefit. So we're here this morning to make the best of your life for the rest of your life. Nice title. Dee, and Dee Cascio is here to talk about how to do that, but she just doesn't talk. She's for real. She's a certified life coach. She's a career coach, and you have some other initials, and I get lost after about two sets of initials.
Okay. Good morning, Bob. Good morning. The other initials license are LPC. I'm a licensed professional counselor as well as a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I've been in private practice for 26 years. And working with couples and individuals around life transitions and adjustments to whatever they need help with.
Great. And we also have Ann Vincent for a return visit. It's been a while, Ann.
Yes, it has.
And Ann is the Director of Business Development with NITP.
And I love it.
Say
I
that
do.
With a smile.
No, I do.
I know you do.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Ann. And Robin Rosen. And Robin is the program manager. She makes sure the books are there. She's our techie. And she's observing. Robin shakes her and she said, good morning, y'all, but I'm not going to talk. That's okay. Anyway, Dean, let's come on back. Making the best of your life for the rest of your life. I like that. That's a book title, too, no?
It's part of a book title. Yes. Yes, it is.
All right. I bet you had a hand in writing it.
I did. And I love that tagline because really our generation, the boomer generation that was born between 1946 and 1964, is quite a group of people. And I think it's going to be different for us because we are redefining retirement. I think our generation is much more educated. We have a lot more experience. Many more people in our generation are in the workforce, especially women. So we have so many more options available to us than we did years ago. So we're going to be really, we don't have role models for having a different kind of retirement. So I like the concept of redefining retirement and using this stage of our lives as a retirement career, to just think of it as a different phase of our career and one that's a little bit differently paced. We aren't going to stop. We're just going to maybe slow the pace down and maybe even redirect our energies to something different.
That's true. Actually, role models were probably our parents. And my dad retired, and 4 years later, he was gone. He didn't plan. Wonderful person, probably my best friend. Uh-huh. And he didn't do it. But a lot of other ones didn't do it. But there's so many, like you say, more avenues available for us now to do something after retire or maybe not retire.
Who would that be?
Well, especially because we have, due to longevity, healthier lifestyles, and medical advances, we're going to be living 25 to 30 years longer than previous generations. And that's another career. So what are we going to do with all that time? And that's why I think we probably need to think about retiring the word retire. That's what people refer to it as. But I like, you know, redirecting or reinventing yourself to look at other aspects of your life and your experience and how you can repurpose it.
And the government recently introduced something called phased retirement. Tammy, one of our colleagues, Tammy Flanagan, writes an article in GovExec every Friday, and she had a very good article on phased retirement and kind of what it means, X, Y, and Z, but it then allows somebody to test the waters. I'm going to work at my prior job, if you will, and then I'm going to be retired halftime. And you can read our article on NITPINC.com, NITPINC.com, and just click over on the left-hand side. You'll see Tammy's For Your Benefit column, and then that's the techie side. We're here to not talk about the techie side. But if you do have questions, you can call in and ask Dee a question if you like. You can call in and ask me a question if you like. But I don't know anything about what you're talking about, but I do know a little bit about tax and finance. And Anne and Rob, Rob is not going to talk. All righty. So, Anne.
I could be promoting of NITP. I'd like to do that.
Okay. Anyway, and how can somebody call? 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. You were saying, I'm sorry.
I was going to say a little bit about the phased retirement, because more companies and even some government agencies are encouraging that. And it's, I think it's much better to have the opportunity to phase out. Maybe you work one less day a week, or your days are shortened, so that it's not just such a jolt. Instead of just walking away one day without a plan, you have an opportunity to, as you phase out, you've got a little bit more time to plan for what you want to do in your retirement when you're not doing work as you've known it.
Okay, now work as we've known it, if we're not going to do it as much or at all, what about work as we don't know it? I mean, when should we be looking at saying, well, I'm going to retire and I'd like to do something? How do you test the waters if you're working full time, or do you interview people? How have your clients, if you were, handled that? Did they start early? Did they start after retirement? Did they just test the waters and say, okay, I'll work here for a few weeks and then I'll work there for a few weeks? Not that jobs are that easy to get anymore, but.
Right. I really encourage people to begin the planning process at least 3 to 5 years before they retire. In fact, I don't know if you saw the article in the Business Journal, Lou Gerstner. They did an interview.
Was that a great article?
That was a great article. And, you know, people would say that he's not really retired, but he started planning a good 10 years, and that's what his advice. He says, you know, you need it, and this is something that I, when I'm doing presentations, talk to people about, is you really need to be thinking about it well in before you retire, so that you begin to develop a plan. You can also do some things. You probably can't go as deeply into it as you want to, but if you've got an interest, a passion, something in our culture that you want to have an effect on, that you can begin learning more about it and knowing where maybe knowing some of your point people that you would want to go to and talk to about it. So, and you really need to be more introspective, because it isn't just about someone saying, well, you know, you should do this or that. It's about what is it within you that makes you want to go in a certain direction? What have you done in your work your whole life that where you can take those skills and that experience and repurpose them into a different career, maybe your own business, volunteering? So
yeah, and
really starting before you retire.
The article that Dee is talking about is the person. He started out in Wall Street. I mean, he didn't just walk into Wall Street, but he's really credited with turning IBM around. IBM was hurting, if you will, and he came in, and I'm not so sure, I can't speak for him, but I don't think he was a techie type. He was a business type. And he said, well, let's do this, let's do that, let's cut this out. He's still kind of reinventing himself, and he does different things. And
Yes, he does. And you know what I like about the article said, I think, Portfolio Life. And what I really encourage people to do is to develop their own retirement lifestyle portfolio. So, like, you know, it, being a person in finances, you have a portfolio with a lot of different financial funds that you have accrued for your retirement. And for the lifestyle part of it, in terms of the transition, it's great to have a little, looking at the six life arenas, having goals in each one of the life arenas, where you can begin to look at, how am I going to take care of myself? What are my goals in that area? How are my relationships going? And what do I need to work on in that particular area? But where do I want to volunteer? And is there something that's touched your family and you would like to volunteer your time, energy, maybe contribute to that particular
Okay, you can be all of our coaches in the room and all the listeners as well. And by the way, this show is rebroadcast a significant number of times during the month. So now they can't call in then, but they can email us. We'll do that later. But certainly you can call us now at 202-465-3080. But let us – I want you to be my coach here now. I'm a workaholic. I like what I do. But maybe I don't like it as much hour-wise. I still really like what I do. But the hours after a certain period of time grate on you. And it's very hard to put it into a lower gear and say, okay, well, maybe I'm going to do this. And I don't know what this is because this is what I like. You know, I can flit off and play around with pinball machines for about 3 days, and then I'm bored, and then I can go to a concert, and afterwards I'm bored. And
Well, maybe there's some people who should just not ever retire. Is that true?
Oh. You hear that, Nancy?
Oh, I do. Oh, well, Nancy, are you listening?
Not now.
You know, Bob, it's interesting that you say that, because certainly I think that our generation is retiring later. The average age is 63, but if you're in good health and you're enjoying what you're doing, why not continue to do it, but just do a little bit less of it? Maybe you can try some phasing. And if you phased, what interest do you have that you could fill that time with that could slow the pace down a little bit for you? How would that work?
I'll have to try.
You have volunteer work. You could expand on that.
So what do you do in your time, you know, when you do want to do something different from work? What do?
I work.
I am put you on the
Well,
spot.
I mean, this is goofy what I do. I pick up trash on the road. I adopted the road. So, you know, I do that a few times a week.
So environmental. You have an environmental.
No, I just don't like looking at the trash. And no one else will pick it up. So, you know, I walk up and down and people feel sorry
value.
For me. He has to collect, aluminum cans to take to the junkyard to make ends meet. But, that's fun. I like putzing in the yard. That's fun. I like doing stuff around the house. That's fun. But we do have a caller who doesn't want to hear about what I think is fun. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. What can we do for you this morning?
Well, I have a question. Dee mentioned the relationship arena. And I have a question about married couples who are retiring about the same time. Like, I retired a few months ago, and my husband's retiring at the end of the month. And I'm concerned about, how are we going to work this out, being home 24/7 together, doing this and doing that? So my question would be, in your experience, what kind of issues, what kind of challenges do married couples face when they both become retired together?
Great, great question. I wrote a newsletter about a year ago entitled, I Married You for Better or for Worse, Just Not for Lunch. And for a number of couples that retire, if they retire together, the biggest issue is maintaining your autonomy and your privacy, because work builds in that time alone when you're commuting and you're at work. But when you are together on a regular basis, you really need to begin to negotiate what time do you want to have to yourself and what time do you want to have together. What are some of the activities that you can share, and what are some of the activities that you want to continue to do on your own while your spouse does something else? So I'm working with someone now, and he's about 10 months from retirement, and he has carved out a place in a finished basement where he can have an office because he wants to write. And that's where he's going to retreat to. And, it also has to do with different styles that people have. Some people are much more social and outgoing, and they want to be out doing things, but the other spouse is maybe more introverted and needs a little bit more prompting. So how do you negotiate those kinds of differences? And my advice to people, if they are planning on retiring before they do, is to begin the conversation. How are we going to work this out so you can have your space and I can have mine, and then we can have our time together? It doesn't mean that you love your spouse any less or anything like that. It's really about having that autonomy and that privacy. That's the biggest challenge. The other challenge is planning, because if you plan for your retirement, you will have things that are built into your schedule. But if you don't, there's going to be a lot of downtime. That can create stress for the other spouse that may have a more active schedule. And then that spouse is feeling responsible for the one that doesn't have enough to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very delicate balance that I think couples are faced with, and they can manage it if they communicate. The most important thing is to talk about it, to cooperate with each other, talk about what some of your fears are, and come to some understanding.
Let me not reverse that, but in my work, and I'm sure everybody in the studio and everybody outside the studio, as Andrew stares at us, there's a certain social aspect of work that's, mm-hmm. to me, very gratifying. It's fun. I talk to people. I do this. I do that. Let's say the person that is looking at retirement is not married or does not have a significant other, and this might provide a lot of their social interplay, if you will. What do they do?
Great question, because actually I worked with someone who had this very concern. She was single. Most of her friends were in her work environment, and she had experienced a relative retiring, and this relative became a recluse. So that was her biggest fear. And so we worked on ways that she could build her support system outside of work. And I think for single people, whether you're single through divorce, or you never married, or your spouse passes away, having a good, solid support system through your church, through various organizations that you belong to, that fortifies your life. And I think single people sometimes, because they have to work harder at building that support system, they tend to, with more resources, be better off than couples if a couple has a divorce or a spouse dies. They have depended on each other so much, they haven't built enough support for themselves. So whether you're married or single, it's really important to have that support system. And I think there are a lot more avenues to have a support system these days, a lot more ways to meet people. And
okay, now I'm looking at one of your bullet points. I kind of like this because, of course, it says financial. And your middle question was great. When looking at retirement and the like, it says, what does money mean to you?
Mm.
I like that one.
Yeah.
You like that?
I do, too.
Other than everything, what does it mean to you?
Ian, do you want to say?
Oh, I guess you could think about that for a long time, but I guess security. That would take a few worries away at night if you had enough money that you're not at a poverty level. But it also means in your leisure time you could travel more, which I would love to do. But I think people look at money so differently. I know my husband looks at it. He likes to spend it. I like to save it. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And how what you're really talking about is how couples really look at
mm-hmm.
money. What does
mm-hmm.
it mean to each of you together? Mm-hmm. Where do you agree, and where might you have some differences? Because sometimes when people retire and they don't have enough to do, they
go shopping.
They get gratification from shopping
mm-hmm.
and spending. And then that creates a problem within the couple, and so the other person starts wanting to restrict money more, and then it takes away from the very thing that you're talking about in terms of the security and having the freedom to do as much as you want to do. Some people look at money for status. That makes them feel important, and when that goes away, you're not earning anymore, you're spending. Again, it requires so much communication to really be on the same page with each other.
I would say the largest, if not the entirety, of the listening audience are fortunate enough when they do retire, or if they already are retired, they have a decent fixed income, whether they're FERS or whether they're CSRS. They need to be concerned, but they don't have to worry about enough money for the basic needs. Mm-hmm. But when I teach the class, I always, I ask this question. I said, when do you spend more money, the weekend or during the work week? And they all go, the weekend. Well, now it's seven-day weekends, so there's more time to spend it. Of course, there might not be some other expenses in the well, but they do need to look at the financial side. So they're not forced to do something maybe they don't want to do. And I would say probably pre-retirement is bordering on too late, so mid-career. And I find in teaching the classes, I find more and more 29-year-olds, 35-year-olds in the pre-retirement class. Why? Because they don't want to make the same mistakes they've heard about others making.
Anyway. Yeah, they're FERS, too, so they have to invest in their thrift plan where the CSRS people had one fund.
One fund, and you know, they can have a thrift, but they don't have the matching.
Correct.
But they have a really nice guaranteed, they call them defined benefit. Let's call it an annuity, a pension, whatever. It's a monthly payment for life, generally with a quote, COLA. Although Bob Bronstein would correct me, that's not really a COLA.
Anyway. And you know, Bob, a lot more people, too, are choosing to work part-time because not only for the financial piece, that you know, just kind of phasing out of the earning process, but because they really want to stay engaged and stay on maybe on top of their game as far as their profession is concerned. I still work in my private practice a couple days a week while I also do some coaching and presentations. And I like that flow, and it could, because it's a little bit slower than it was before, but it keeps me on top of what's going on in my professions.
Do you ever coach groups?
I've coached. In fact, when we do presentations, I think it's almost you're in a coaching environment because you're asking powerful questions, you're getting people to think and respond and kind of reflect on what's really going on with them and what's important to them in terms of this retirement process.
I've seen from myself, my first job, because I couldn't find a job, they graduated from school in a really bad time for jobs, and I wound up doing income tax returns. I would have never thought that. But if I had taken a test, you know, a preference test, that would have scored negative. And so are there tests without having to go through a battery of tests that people can take or a book they can read to say, okay, this is what you do, but here, answer these questions, and you might find a parallel. Might find a left or a right-hand turn, too.
You know, I know there are a number of sites out there there are a couple sites I want to bring to the listeners' attention today. One is whatsnext.com. There's a values inventory on there that's really good. And another website regarding strengths. It's the positive psychology website. So knowing yourself is the most important thing. And what I like to do is run people through an exercise where you look at your history, your work history, the jobs you've held, the positions that you've held within that career area, what you liked about that work and what you would not want to go back and revisit, things that you didn't like about your work. And then to see where are the patterns, what are you noticing, and then to begin to look at those strengths and the things you enjoy doing and how can you plug those into another career or maybe something part-time.
Now,
but you got to do really...
Websites. What's your website, and how can somebody get in touch with you?
The name of my website is www.retirementlifestylestrategies.com.
One more time.
www.retirementlifestylestrategies.com.
Perfect. All righty. Years ago, once I found out that I didn't mind public speaking. I was scared to death of it. Most of my school, college, probably got a D in public speaking. High school, I just didn't do it. But then I kind of liked it. So I said, well, maybe I can help somebody. So I started teaching troubled kids. That was really neat.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't teach them. I just talked about, you know, how do you get from point A to point B. And I used to always say, tell somebody what you're going to do and then do what you say. And that was kind of the thrust of it. And we can talk off air about some of the comments that were made, and they were really funny, but they were sad at the same time.
Why did you stop doing that?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too.
I work for a not-for-profit. I didn't no fee, but they ran out of funding.
Mm-hmm.
And it was too hard to run around to all the different schools and whatnot to say, do you do this? No, we don't do it. And, you know, so it just it went by the proverbial board. So I, you know, did other stuff. I'm sure the listeners know I'm an accountant. So I volunteered for the Speakers Bureau, and because I was a low person on the totem pole, I got these awful assignments. And I had to talk to high school seniors about what it's like to be an accountant. What do they care? And first of all, that's the last thing they want to be. And although Miss America is an accountant.
That's right. Miss Connecticut.
Yes. And anyway, so I did that. And then to work my way up, then I became the director of the whatever you want to call it, the Speakers Bureau for the state of Maryland, and then I started to take the good gigs. You know, I talked to the Convention of Credit Unions, and I talked to this, and then they called me in, and they said, do you take all the good ones? And I said, yeah, you gave me all the bad ones at the beginning. It's my turn. And they fired me from the director. It's okay.
So you just named several things that if you were to look at your retirement lifestyle portfolio and – think about maybe there's one, if you wanted to go back, this is just a, you know, an example that maybe would help the listeners. If there's a way that you could volunteer to just help one child somewhere, your public speaking, what you feel passionate about that you would want to speak about that could help other people. And with NITP, you're going in and helping. You know,
a lot
you're doing
of people.
Presentations,
yeah.
A lot of people.
And it's fun. And this show, you know, there's no commercials on this show. I'm sure the people listening know that. And it's because it's kind of a payback because the feds have been awfully good to us. So I suppose it's good to be good to them.
Yeah.
It comes around and all that stuff. Okay, personal growth. You got all these great bullet points, and I'm probably leaving some out. So personal growth, what does personal growth mean? Okay, we've grown through our retirement. We're good at what we do, and now we're going into another area where maybe we're going to continue on what we could do good, or we just say, I don't want to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So personal growth, how do you think it's important to continue to grow in your retirement years? I mean, some people get very stale, and they just sit on the proverbial couch and watch the TV and wait for the male person to come. And,
yeah, I know. It sounds
boring. It happens. And anyway.
Know, well, Mark Friedman has written several books. Actually, he wrote his first one in the 90s called Prime Time. And even as a young person, he knew the trend of this wave of boomers. And he predicted some of the things that are going on now just in terms of the numbers. But he's also written another couple books, Encore and The Big Shift. And what Mark says is that there's a new life stage being defined between the end of our middle years and the beginning of true old age, if you will, 80, 85 plus, because we're all living so much longer. I mean, the average age for men is 80.4, I think, and for women is 82.6. And he says that if we plan well, we can become where our retirement can become a destination where talents, skills, and experience can be the solution to much of what ails our society. And that has a lot to do with volunteering. But the whole thing about growth is that when we're in our work, we want to stay on top of our game and keep that professional edge. And I really think that as we move into this retirement re-careering part of our lives, no matter what we do with it, that we want to keep our personal growth edge, that we want to continue to learn different things and be willing to take some risks and do different things that we've never done before. You talked about public speaking and how terrified you were of it. Well, that was me about 4 or 5 years ago. I just hated it. And what I did was I went to Toastmasters and I spent almost 3 years there learning how to be comfortable in front of people. And then to the National Speakers Association where I'm learning a different aspect of speaking. there's just, I've never really did any writing until I started writing newsletters 6 years ago, and that skill's developed. So it's about taking what is there but maybe undeveloped in you and beginning to give it some life and breathe fresh air into that skill.
And have the nerve to get step outside of the comfort zone.
Exactly.
Which it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
The older you get, the harder it is to do that.
I'll tell you off air how I learned public speaking. It was an interesting comment, but once I did that, it was not so hard anymore. But it's off air and can't go over the air.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm curious now.
He's blushing.
I am?
Yeah.
So in volunteering is also another way. If you want to, you know, sometimes you want to volunteer at maybe a career area or profession that you're interested in, and then maybe that turns into something that could be another phase of your career or part-time work.
All righty. And you have, by the way, Dee has really put together a nice set of talking points, and if we covered them all, we'll be here till tomorrow morning. But there's one. In January 2011, 12,000 boomers began turning 65 years of age each day.
Mm-hmm.
This pace will continue uninterrupted for 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that says something about the need to work, and maybe there'll be more competition for those part-time jobs, but it also talks about Social Security and Medicare and what are the issues floating around with that. That's certainly a subject for another show when we bring somebody in from Social Security, as well as some of the financial planners, and Tammy as well. Tammy understands that Medicare, Medicaid better than most, I would say. That many?
Yeah, well, you know, when our parents came home from the war, they were very busy picking up their lives where they left off. And that's what created this huge boom. 78 million people, yes, going strong. I'm kind of proud. I'm very proud of our generation.
Me too.
Because I think we've done a lot of great things over the years.
I'm very happy in my boomer
status.
Yeah. Shoes. All righty.
Yeah,
we have somebody on the phone. I don't know if they're a boomer or not, but good morning.
Okay.
You know, I'm a little bit older than boomers.
Okay.
but you know, I'm very impressed with your guest. My God, I'm into learn writing, attending Toastmasters. Now, that is that's interesting. I mean, I know that a lot of people do that for public speaking. But
I think it's...
Well, kudos to her.
Yeah,
that's great.
I think you hit on a point, too. It's public speaking, but sometimes if it's a tangent to what you do, I mean, we can all talk about what we do probably one-on-one, sitting around a dinner table or a radio show. But to go out in front of a group of 10, 15, 300 and be able to come across and they all get something out of it, you're right.
I'm telling you, the first time I spoke in front of 300 people, I said, my God, I'm going to probably just completely choke. But then I said, hell, I know what I'm talking about. And these guys don't. So, by the way, when is Tammy coming back for your show? I haven't heard in a long time.
She was here a couple weeks ago.
Oh, is she coming back?
Oh yeah, sure. She's extremely busy, but
You know, at the cost of repeating, I think they should appoint her the associate director in OPM for benefits.
Okay, Tammy, I hope you're listening to that.
what a compliment!
She is very knowledgeable.
She cares, you know, and then everybody in here cares too. But Tammy really cares. She's 24/7 benefits and helping people and.
I know there was some write-up I just recently read about, her contribution. I forget where.
It's Money Magazine last year.
Oh, that's where it was.
She was named as a money hero by a federal employee and filtered down.
That for me. She has helped me out over the years anyway. Thanks a lot. I'm really enjoying the show.
Okay, good. You keep listening.
I want to praise this lady who has done it. Something that I haven't heard before.
Okay. And that's rare. Thanks for calling, and keep listening and tell your friends.
But Tammy is coming in later on this month, by the way?
Probably not later on this month, because this month about over. But should be on in not the distant future. We're going to do a Roth conversion show probably in July. Just update the one that's on the site because it's about a year old, and I really enjoy doing that show with her. Any show with her, but that one, she's forgotten more about benefits than most people know. So.
That plus once in a while you and Mr. Causey does it together. That's also good.
Yeah, that's fun because they, you know, we each have our different disciplines and we look out into the short term future.
Thanks
Alrighty.
A lot.
Really good talking to you.
Bye
bye. Bye now. There's some other things under these stats. The average age of a retiree is 64 for men and 62 for women.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't think the spread was that close. But that's just guessing, but. Well, I'm already beyond retirement age, so.
I think that probably also has to do with the fact that women have been in the workforce for so long and they're experiencing the same kind of readiness, maybe some stress. They're more ready to let go and do something different closer to the same time. Yeah.
Okay. Again, we've got a couple callers. Let's see if we can't get five today. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080, and we're talking with Dee Cascio, and she's a certified life coach.
Mm-hmm.
And you have all those other initials, and she's a presenter at our retirement seminars as well as on the transition topic into retirement. And you can see why she is, because she knows. And she's a marketing maven. You probably never talk to Anne, but those that have, of course, love her. And Robin is not going to say anything, but the folks that do deal with Robin appreciate her follow-up and her making sure things show up on time for the seminars and the newsletters go out on time and they make sense and they're read well. And she's a techie type, too. Robin, how do I plug this thing in?
Plug it in.
You have a great support system, Bob. Really
I know. and I am eternally grateful for that.
Yeah.
All right. And then you mentioned here this National Center for Family and Marriage Research at Bowling Green State University mm-hmm. found that at least one in four marriages of those 50 or over are ending in divorce.
Yeah.
Why would somebody get – I mean, if – I won't say put up with the person. If they were with a person for that long, unless they were there for the kids. Now, that one I can understand.
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually admire them a little bit for that,
mm-hmm.
Unless it messes the kids up. But the point is, why get that? I can see some, but not that many. I mean, I'm not disputing it, of course, but it just, to me, is why would somebody do that?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. And I think... what's probably going on is that what you said that couples are staying together for the kids as they begin to get launched, they feel more comfortable beginning that separation process. And sometimes, marriage is it's a wonderful way to live in relationship. We always learn much more about ourselves when we're in relationship with someone else. But it's a lot. It is work. You need to work at it every single day. I learned that. I married later in life. I was almost 41 when I got married. And I thought my background as a therapist would like float me right on through. But I soon learned that that wasn't true and that I had some work to do. So, you know, really making your relationship, because a husband and wife are there before the children are born. So really protecting that relationship and making sure you nurture it through the years is very important. What happens for a lot of couples is they get caught up in what's going on with the kids. If they run into conflict, instead of trying to resolve it, they kind of push it under the rug. And that's when things begin to slow down as far as the communication. There are certain things you can't talk about. And that distances couples, unfortunately. Some can recover. I've worked with some that have recovered, and they've done it beautifully. They're closer than they were when they first met. But others just decide they want to start all over again.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that when you start all over again, you usually end up unless you've done some personal work in the same, very similar set of circumstances, just a different person.
Yeah, I like your second, the last sentence in this paragraph. In fact, more than 60% of second marriages end in divorce.
Ooh.
So the proverbial grass is greener.
Yeah. And once you go through a divorce, I've never done that, so I can't relate. I've certainly worked with a number of people that have, but going through a divorce and then having to go through it again, just
overwhelming.
Overwhelming, yeah. Huh. It is.
Yeah, it's kind of like as you date, you know, if you dated somebody for a while and then it didn't work and then you do another one, then what's wrong with me? And it's actually what's wrong with them. But.
Of course.
All righty.
Got to have the right match.
All righty. Another stat here, 65 million people, 29% of the U.S. population providing care for chronically ill, disabled, or aged family members during any given year and spend an average of 20 hours a week providing for their loved ones.
Yeah.
Boy, is that a I'll say it's a burden because I can't get the right word. It's not a burden if it's a loved one, but it's a time burden and it's an emotional burden. But knowing that.
Well, we are a sandwich generation because we have children that some people still have kids that are still at home, and maybe they're in high school or college, and then we have aging parents. My dad is 95, and my dad has Alzheimer's. That's one of the huge energy pulls because I know this is an underestimation. 5 million people have been diagnosed with it, but that's mid to late stage. Then you've got early stage Alzheimer's that requires attention and time from family members. And, you know, we are being called to, you know, be that nurturer to our kids still growing up and our parents. And some of us have both parents left. And I don't, but I know a number of people do, and they're both. So I think it really, hopefully what it says is make sure that you take responsibility for whatever long-term care you can get in place for yourself if you're pre-retirement age. And in terms of caregiving, you know, you've got to reach out outside the family and reach for support because you can't do it by yourself. It's as people are living longer, we've got hip replacements and knee replacements and heart surgeries. Our parents are living longer, so we are becoming caregivers, and we are also we can also end up with a spouse if we're still working that needs to be cared for, and how are we going to manage that?
When you said sandwich generation, what about people expect their parents to take care of their grandchildren? You know, are they quit work to stay home with their grandchildren? Isn't that a big pressure, too? I mean, some people want to do that, but it takes up all their time then.
Yes, some people make their next career taking care of grandchildren. It's I like to look at grandparenting as a gift to your son or daughter and grandchild because you can be a part of their lives, but also a gift to you because you get to, you know, have that experience. But to set some boundaries so that you leave them wanting more and you don't put your son or daughter in a situation where they have to take responsibility for you. They want to keep you busy. that you've got enough going on in your life that you can take care of that. But you complement maybe a day or two a week, or you know, you take them for a weekend so that the parents can go off and have a weekend together, so they can nurture that relationship. So yeah, it's about boundaries and
being able to say no.
Say no. Yeah, yeah, saying no.
Okay, you got another interesting stat. There's a large increase in entrepreneurs up substantially. That could be a function of they want to go into business or they can't find a job.
Mm-hmm.
But the coaching there, I mean, I someone get into that, certainly not as a coach, but somebody said, what do you think about if I did X, Y, or Z. And you know, depending on how long I've known him, I go, no. Or, man, that's good, but do you realize you have to do X, Y, and Z in a business? And others will volunteer for not-for-profits.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where I got it. I'm involved with a couple. But how do you deal with a type A, somebody that was a manager or boss, and then they're going to volunteer and work for this not-for-profit, and they're going to be told what to do? Or mm-hmm. here, you have to go out and market. And they go, what? How do you get over that hump, or do you get over that hump?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure that there's an answer for that. But if somebody's really into being in charge and they can't be, and you know, maybe in this case, an employee, then that person might want to really think about what can they start on their own. You know, take that energy. It takes a lot of energy to run your own business, even whether it's a nonprofit, and maybe they take it and run with it.
I'm on a board of one, but it's of dual interest. It's called Rock and Roll for Kids, Children. And it's kind of like, well, it's what it is. We bring in aging rock and rollers and put on like a concert. It's not going to fill the Verizon Center. It's small. but I mean, these are named people. Some of them are up there in today's limelight. Others have gone down the other side. And the director and his spouse, quadruple type A, but he listens, and he can be tough, but I really like him and his wife, and Nancy does too. But he listens to each of the board members, or what do you think we should do? Maybe we can do other things other than these extravaganzas.
Mm-hmm.
They take a lot of time and effort and money. But anyway, and I don't mind that.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, here, you go count the beans, and you do the tax return, and you do this or that. Okay.
Yeah, because it sounds like you're a valuable part and contributor to that organization. And that's another thing, Bob, that goes in your portfolio for something that you could, when you can let go of work.
Mm. I noticed.
I have the same problem that you do to some extent, but...
I noticed Bob never went to item number 5, fun and relaxation.
Oh, I guess
yes.
We're going there
now.
I think we should. Yes.
I think that's a great way to summarize our getting
done. Fun and relaxation.
What's
okay,
that?
Number
5. What do we do for
that? Well, yeah, I guess you have to ask yourself what brings you joy.
Yes.
And then that goes into fun and relaxation. Is
mm-hmm.
that correct?
Yes.
So you have to kind of think about what really makes you smile or laugh. Be happy.
Once I
content,
get someplace,
be
I'm
serene.
All right. No, once I get someplace, I'm okay.
You mean on a vacation?
Or even just, okay, I'm going to go to a ball game. I'm going to go to something that I don't necessarily want to go to. That's not a ball game. So,
it's like extracting yourself from the...
And once I'm there, I'm fine.
Uh-huh.
But getting from home to there is very hard.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's not hard to list what... gives you joy. It's
right.
Actually making the effort
and to
do
it.
That.
Make it
yeah.
happen.
And you would think you'd learn after a while that, hey, once you get there, it's fine. It was kind of like doing radio, scared to death. And then once you learn that there's nothing to be afraid of, and in fact, you're helping people, and if somebody calls and asks a question you just can't answer, you say, I don't know, but I'll get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's little life lessons there. Maybe.
It says life balance.
There
yeah.
is
life,
none.
Life
with a capital
balance.
L. Okay.
We're giving Bob a hard
what
time.
I think I hear my mother
bicycle?
Calling.
Huh? You hear your mother calling.
Which would be pretty hard. But...
yeah.
All right, so, moving right along.
Oh, we're not going to talk about fun and relaxation. I was having fun
talk
with
about
this.
Fun and relaxation. I'm okay with that. Okay. I actually enjoy most of the things I do. It's just I. But they're within a certain narrow range.
Mm-hmm.
Work.
Work.
But seminars are fun.
Yeah, interacting with people and broadening your horizons. I'm always really amazed at the things I learn when I do a presentation that people say, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so how do I get coached to, what would I not want to do? Go to a concert for an artist that I don't particularly care for. Not that I don't like the person, I just don't like the music. But it's, you know, I could sit there and be relaxed because it's relaxing music. But I don't go. Nancy does, but I don't.
Yeah. Oh, so Nancy goes, but you don't?
Well, not to many things. We generally don't have, interesting, we don't generally like the same thing.
Oh.
But we can appreciate each other's likes. Mm-hmm. And, but there's some things she won't go to. And mm-hmm. there's a couple things I won't go to. She's much more flexible than I, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But once I get there, I go, this isn't so bad.
Isn't so bad.
So how, it's like trying to find a way to reinforce that behavior because it felt good, you know?
Right. I guess one of the things I'll never like is high school reunion.
Oh, really? Mm.
It's not that, you know, there's some other guys talking or what. I don't know anyone. So I go into the bar with all the other people that don't know anybody, and we have a good time.
Why, didn't you know anybody at your high school reunion?
No, my wife's.
Oh, her, Nancy's reunion. Oh, yeah. Oh,
maybe they changed so much they're not familiar.
No, I'd like mine up until the last one, but
yeah, it's a little awkward when you go to those things. That's true, because you don't know anybody.
Yeah, and it was fine. And then the rest of the people that didn't know anybody, where else would they be? The bar. And Aaron Drew's telling us we're going to be talking to ourselves because we have 1 minute left to go.
Yeah, we do.
So why don't we bring it down to the proverbial smooth landing? Final comments, Dee.
First of all, I really appreciate being with you today and with Ann and Robin. It's been fun. And I would really encourage everyone to plan very carefully for this stage of life as they move into their next career phase. It's just going to be a little bit slower to, if you plan well, you will have a soft landing and you'll make the best of your life for the rest of your life.
All right. Thanks. Great talking to you. And we'll be on next week. Heavens forbid I remember who is going to be on next week. Nancy, don't kill me. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.